Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Opel and the all-new Opel Crossland. Beauty isn't scared of life.
Events of the past few weeks have turned the spotlight on the experiences of women and particularly on victims of gender-based violence. Now, on this programme, we spoke to Sarah Grace, a solicitor who was violently assaulted in her home. But she told us that the subsequent trial she went through was a worse experience than the attack itself. Now, for more on this, I'm joined by Nolene Blackwell, who's CEO of the Rape Crisis Centre. Good morning, Nolene.
Good morning, Claire.
Thanks very much for joining us. Just before we chat, I want to tell people what Sarah said, and we'll have a listen as well, because in hindsight, Sarah said she found the court system was worse than the attack she went through. She didn't want to dissuade anyone from going to court because overall she was glad that she had. She also wanted them to be prepared, though, for the reality of it. And one thing that blindsided her about the whole court's process was that the defence team had access to her counselling notes. Let's have a listen to what Sarah had to say.
When you go to therapy after, you know, a rape, a sexual violence or sexual assault incident, those notes, whether they're from the Rape Crisis Centre or not, by the way, it's any therapist, any counselling records can be taken and will form part of the evidence in trial. And two things shocked me on that. One was, we're only doing this to discredit the victim. So all of my notes kind of lined up with what I was saying. So they weren't used to kind of back up my evidence. But if there was any discrepancy or anything that I had mentioned in there where I said, oh, maybe he didn't quite do that, but I think he did, anything like that, that would be used to discredit me, and defense could use that to discredit me. The other thing that shocked me was I wasn't warned that this would happen by the guards and by the court system. So it was kind of 4 months after commencing therapy, and we're talking weekly therapy, Claire. You know, I'm opening up about my deepest, darkest thoughts following this in order to heal. And, you know, I'm doing that in the confidence of a counselling room. And out of nowhere, I'm told I need to sign over these counselling records. And if I don't sign them over, the judge can force the release anyway, and all you're doing is delaying the trial. Why are we putting sexual violence and rape victims through that kind of pressure when they're just trying to survive after, you know, such a traumatic attack? It just really doesn't make sense to me.
That was Sarah Gray speaking to us last week. And Nolene, so many people got in touch with the programme and expressed their shock to hear that this was the case in sexual assault and rape trials. You clearly are aware of this, but it's a huge problem for people like Sarah Gray.
Yeah, it's a huge problem, and it is specific to a very small subset of trials as well, Claire. Because as Sarah said, the purpose of having to hand over your notes is not to explain what you went through. I mean, if the notes were out there for most victims of sexual violence, and if the jury were to hear the level of harm and hurt that people experience, then that would be one thing. But this is exactly to see, does what the victim of the crime says to their counsellor, does that line up with what they said to the guards? Now, you see, you have to get evidence in court. Everyone recognises that. But in most crimes, what happens is the complainant makes their statement to the Gardaí, then they go into court and they give their evidence, and the defence will test that evidence by saying, what you said here is different to what you said to the Gardaí, or this lines up with what you said to the Gardaí. For victims of rape and sexual assault, they have to line up not just with what they said to the Gardaí, but also with what they said to their counsellors. Why is that? It's because so often these crimes take place in private, and this is used as additional corroboration, because there is, you know, it goes back a long, long way. How do we know she is telling the truth? Because it was nearly always about a she. And one of the ways that the law developed to see whether someone was telling the truth was to say, we'll find out what they're saying to their counsellor as well. And there is something awful about it. It's a question that, and you know, we run counselling services. And again, just to remind people, we do run counselling services. Counselling is a way of healing, as Sarah said. And we operate a system whereby people can get their counselling for free if they can't afford it. We do ask for a contribution if that's possible, but we do get state subsidies for it as well. But in relation to the notes then that come out, that is the place where the person should be able to say whatever it is that's important.
Because but you can't.
It's what they
you can't,
say
Nolene.
About the assault, but it's also about what they might have brought in.
Yeah,
you know,
but see, Nolene, when I heard Sarah explain this, I thought that now, if you're a victim of sexual assault and you go for counselling, you have to be very much on your guard. Because could you have the defence saying to you, well, you say your life was devastated by this, but actually you went on 3 dates last March?
Yeah. And that is one of the things that people feel awful about, that if they go on a date afterwards, or if, say, for instance, even before it, if they'd been on dates with 3 different people beforehand in the previous month, is someone going to accuse them of being sluttish or promiscuous or whatever it is? So very often, so if it was, there can be perhaps some very limited reasons to bring in evidence outside of what someone says to the guards. And if it was a case that there was a really great reason for it, now those great reasons don't actually come to mind, but if there was a great reason, then there should be a case that the first person to hear about this would be the judge to make a decision. But actually what happens is that counselling notes get handed over very, very regularly because the guards ask for them or the DPP ask for them. And even people who don't want to hand over their notes will often get the sense from the Gardaí that in order to progress the investigation, this has to happen. The more I think about it, Claire, the more I see of this, and the more I recognise that very often defence will ask for notes that they don't use. It is used as a way of intimidating. It is used as a way of reducing people's capacity to access counselling. And Sarah raises a really, really good point in saying, why do you ask for extra corroboration in this area where you wouldn't ask for it if someone was the victim of a physical assault?
Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't ask for it if their bag had been stolen. You wouldn't ask for notes of their counselling notes.
Okay.
So it's a question of disbelieving victims of sexual violence.
Messages coming in on this, and one person says, whilst this is distressing for a complainant, it could show up inconsistencies. The rights of the defence must also be protected in a criminal trial. Now, what do you say to that?
Absolutely. In the same way as they should be in every other trial as well. And in other trials, though, the questions that are asked are based on what somebody told the Gardaí and then what they say in court. It is only in areas of sexual violence that they're asked for this extra private information in relation to their counselling notes. So where else do you have to go for corroboration? There are a number of ways in which in sexual assault cases, including rape, that our man-made, and I use the word advisedly, our man-made system of justice is not capable of getting at the truth in sexual offences because they build on the same criteria that they use for other cases and which don't work in intimate violence, but they also work from requiring extra evidence that is not required in other cases. If I go and say I've had a physical assault, nobody is going to ask for my therapist notes.
Mm-hmm. And the DPP explains to people in the court system that if a victim doesn't consent to the records being released, the judge then will make a ruling on when they're relevant or not. Is it always the case that the judge will say, yes, you can have those notes to the defence? Or has there ever been a situation where the judge says, no, you shouldn't have those notes?
Yeah, there actually has. It's new enough legislation and it's rarely used. But where it is used, actually, a judge has said you can have this bit of the notes, but you can't have the other bit. But in reality, Claire, that's not what happens. That's not real life. because it doesn't even get as far as a trial for the most part, because the Gardaí and the DPP are both aware that the counselling notes may need to be handed over later. So they look at them ever before a trial starts. And in those cases, it never gets to a judge at all. So the reality for most victims of sexual offences is that they have to make that decision about handing over their notes way before charges are laid, and therefore the whole question of a judge ever looking at them is irrelevant. So in fact, while the law is there, it's structured in such a way that it is not useful for many many of those who would prefer not to hand over their notes. And you see, it was bad enough for Sarah Clare, but when you think about it, most sexual offences relate to somebody known to the person who's making the complaint. So you're probably saying things about your relationship. If, say, for instance, it's your partner that commits the offences, or somebody that you know in a friendship, you are saying things that are, you know, might distress a whole group of people, and the accused has access to these notes. It's not just a lawyer. The accused may have access to them. You may be saying things about somebody who has breached your trust, and, you know, where the word will get back to, you know, his family or her family or whatever it is. So there's a real, it's a really good way of, I suppose, intimidating victims, recognising that they need to produce a higher level of evidence than other people who make complaints of offences into the criminal justice system.
Now, there were a couple of other things that Sarah Grace raised that I wanted to discuss with you. And as we know, Sarah Grace is a solicitor. She doesn't practice in this area of law, but nonetheless, she's familiar with the law. And even for her, the experience physically of being in court was traumatising. So you can imagine how difficult it is for somebody who is not in that profession. Is there anything that can be done or that is being done to change this, Nolene?
Yeah. So, exactly. So, at the moment, we, for instance, in the Dublin Rape Crisis Centre, and so do the other rape crisis centres, run programmes whereby we will accompany people to court, but we can give what they call psychological support. We can't, you know, we're not lawyers. We don't give legal advice. And currently, there is very limited legal advice available to people at some stage post-charge. But the in fairness to the O'Malley report, and some of the reforms that are recommended include greater access to legal advice to people who are victims of sexual crime. But I still think, Claire, that we're not even starting yet to understand what a victim's rights should be in these cases. The truth is, in these cases, where mostly the evidence is entirely just composed of the accounts of the accused and of the complainant, in most of those cases, the reality is that the only amateur in the court is the victim, the person giving the preliminary evidence. There are two people who are kind of amateurs, but one of them has advice. So if someone is charged, accused of rape and charged with it, they will have access to free legal aid and a full team of lawyers. Everybody else giving evidence is likely to be an expert. So a Garda, someone coming from a sexual assault treatment unit, they're all trained to give evidence. The only person who doesn't know what's coming up is the person, the victim of the crime, the person giving that evidence. And for the most part, they are allowed to know. The DPP does not act for them. The DPP may have a meeting with them, will have a meeting with them in advance, but they cannot be seen to be supporting that victim in any particular way. I maintain that it is entirely unfair, and part of the reason why justice is not done, the truth is not heard in these cases, where somebody is asked to go in to tell a room full of strangers about the most traumatic thing that ever happened to them in their life, often, and for which they may be, which may scar them for life, and they are sent in there into a room where they know very little of what's going on. If they're lucky, they've had a bit of familiarisation with a rape crisis centre or a victim support service. But for the purpose of the case, the accused has been taken through their statement in an organised way, not coached, but taken through it so that they understand what's going on. And the victim has no support at that stage. Mm-hmm. And questions may be asked, which depend on the judge you get as to whether they will be answered or not. The way that they're asked, the manner of the questions, all of these things are put to somebody who is telling a room full of strangers about something awful that happened, and where they are so conscious that everything falls on them and that they are going to be accused of being a liar. So there is something in that we are not doing right. There's some way we are not recognising that intimate violence cases require particular support for witnesses who are vulnerable simply by reason of their circumstances. And that representation, it's not happening yet, Claire. It's not recommended in the O'Malley report. I believe it will have to come when we fully recognise victim rights.
And the issue of the screen. So Sarah Grace wanted a screen, yep, so that she wouldn't have to look at the person she was accusing in her evidence and who was ultimately convicted of this crime. Now, I should say that she said the people in the DPP's office, the Gardaí, everybody she came across, they were so helpful and kind to her, but it was the system. And when it came to the screen, it was very, very difficult to have that put in place. And she explained how she felt that if the screen was in place for all cases, then there wouldn't be an inference of guilt if it's
exactly
jury trial.
Yeah. So she's quite right about that. So screens or video links are the way to deal with vulnerable witnesses. And again, just to make the point that Sarah was not a person who was she didn't know her abuser, and she needed that screen in order to be able to say what she needed to say, again, about somebody who did things that she could never have anticipated would happen her in a lifetime. And we hear that again and again, and we hear it from people who are abusers, from people who are living with their abusers, who are staring them straight in the face as they're giving the evidence. It's kind of beyond me that this can't be done for everybody right now, or that video link evidence can't be given.
All right, Nolene, we'll leave it there. Thank you very much indeed for joining us. Nolene Blackwell there from the Dublin Rape Crisis Centre. And you can contact the Dublin Rape Crisis Centre on 1-800-77-8888 or Women's Aid on 1-800-341-900. And some news too on Sarah Grace. The Minister for Justice, Helen McEntee, has organised a meeting with her to discuss her experience of the justice system, and hopefully we'll be able to bring you an update on the outcome of that when it happens.